I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. I'm here speaking with Jessica Wilkerson, who is a Food and Drug Administration Senior Cybersecurity Advisor for Medical Devices. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you're here at the HHS NIST HIPAA Summit speaking about medical device cybersecurity. What are some of the top cyber-related issues that you're seeing this year involving these products, and what's changing?
Absolutely. So as I was preparing for this question and really thinking through it with the team, it was interesting because we did start to think through what are some of the newest emerging trends, what are we really trying to keep on top of, and we kept coming back to really this focus on the basics. So FDA was granted relatively new authority for cybersecurity back at the end of 2022, and what we've really seen is that in a lot of ways, even as we think about these new emerging trends, we're seeing the biggest bang for our buck when we see the manufacturers do the basics really well. So things like putting together a very comprehensive software bill of materials, putting together a really comprehensive threat model. And so what we've been trying to do is work with the manufacturing community, work internally to FDA to say, how do we make it easier to be good at the foundational things? How do we make it easier to be good at these basics? So a lot of our focus has been on developing resources, on finding out where the pain points are from the manufacturers, which include things like SBOMs, creating network diagrams, doing some of the risk assessments, especially for more complex vulnerabilities. So we're trying to identify how we can be helpful in making that process easier, because we think the easier we make it to have a cybersecure medical device, the more cybersecure medical devices we will have.
And so you mentioned the enhanced authority that the FDA was granted in December 2022 as part of an omnibus spending bill. And last year, the new refuse to accept policy went into effect that allows the FDA to reject medical device pre-market submissions that do fail to contain the long list of cybersecurity requirements that you mentioned, you know, some of them being, like you said, you know, software, bill of materials, also how to address post-market vulnerabilities, coordinated disclosures of exploits, you know, things like that. And you mentioned that there's also some pain points. What do you see, you know, the requirements that are kind of most challenging for many of these companies? What is it when, you know, the FDA does reject or says, hey, you got to go back to the drawing board? What are the issues that are generally most often cited?
Sure. So I think when we look at the issues where we're seeing the most deficiencies or the most ongoing conversations with manufacturers, because FDA has moved away from that refuse to accept model to this E-Star model, which allows us to be a little bit more interactive with the manufacturers. But I think the places where we're seeing the most conversations or questions or having to go back, penetration testing has been one of the big areas. There have been some issues with how penetration tests are being scoped. So going back to some of the things that we've been talking about today with FDA's new authority, the authority speaks to cyber devices and their related systems. So we have seen some penetration tests that limit to the device but don't look at the related systems. We've also seen an issue where FDA has been working with the manufacturers to explain that we want the penetration testing to be fresh. We want it to have been performed recently. And the challenges sometimes with the way medical device development works, this is a multi-year process. Manufacturers are trying to figure out when do they start and when maybe do they finish with penetration testing. So that's been a little bit of an issue. They come in and the penetration tests may be a little bit old in FDA's eyes. And then I think the final issue that we see with penetration testing is, frankly, that if there are issues with the pen test, that there's only a limited pool of penetration testers who are qualified. And so you have a big pool of medical device manufacturers who are trying to draw from the same pool of penetration testers, and they just can't find testers, and they can't get it done on the schedules they need, which can't hold up their submissions. So penetration testing has been a big one for us.
And now one of the things that came up during the session was device cybersecurity and patient safety issues, and that often, for instance, when there's a ransomware attack and things are analyzed, it's not the ransomware malware itself that, you know, infects these medical devices, but it's more the question of availability. The systems that just have to be shut down. What are you seeing, and what is the advice that you're giving to health delivery organizations that need to protect these devices, but they might not necessarily think about that as the primary thing when they're dealing with a ransomware attack?
I think we are trying to have conversations that, again, get at that education element, because, and realizing that your podcast listeners weren't necessarily at this earlier panel, one of the main elements that came up is, especially for folks who their job is to deliver healthcare, their job is not to be cybersecurity experts, or you have cybersecurity experts who just have never been the cybersecurity person in a healthcare institution, they may go to the basics, as we were talking about, in terms of, well, it's cybersecurity best practice in a usual IT environment to do XYZ when this thing happens. And so we were trying to have conversations with with organizations, including manufacturers, hospitals, whoever, that trying to tell them what the impacts may be. So if you pull down a network and all of your devices depend on a network in order to communicate amongst each other, to talk to the electronic health record, well, then they can't talk to each other anymore. And it oftentimes we find it's less so deliberate, and sometimes it's just not something that people have thought about. Or you have situations where the healthcare experts who would know that that was going to be a problem are not necessarily in the room with the cybersecurity experts, the chief information security officers and so on, who are making the call to pull down the network. And so it's, I think we've been trying to very much talk at conferences like this and on podcasts like this to get people's brains going on considering these risks and considering what some of the alternatives may be to both have a protection for cybersecurity concerns and yet not create these safety issues.
So what should the medical device makers be thinking about when it comes to these availability issues that seem like they might be somewhat out of their control? Or what can they do to make, are there any fallbacks, for instance, on keeping your devices and your equipment available even if the systems in the hospital are shut down? Or what do you tell the manufacturers?
So I think there are two separate but interrelated considerations when we think about that. One is FDA is very much having conversations with the manufacturers and have incorporated it into our review process that where medical devices have dependencies on things like remote capabilities, cloud, even talking to other devices within a network, we ask the manufacturers and we make sure they have documented and explained to us what happens if that communication is severed, if that remote connection is severed, and that their device is still able to operate as intended. So that is part of FDA's review right now, largely based on our experiences of seeing incidents exactly like this happen. I think some of the broader considerations about looking to trying to help the hospitals out as well, this is something that is much more of a sector-based conversation than anything that FDA would do on our own. But I know there have been conversations about, well, for these devices where we've pulled, we've taken away the screens so that the ability to actually look at the data on a screen by a human happens somewhere else. Do we put the screens back on the device so you can actually stand at the device and do something like a radiographic read or something like that? So I know some of those considerations have been raised, and I think that will be a very interesting conversation to see develop between the manufacturers and the hospitals, because we're not going to see these issues go anywhere. And so there may be some opportunities for the healthcare sector as a whole to really come together and think through, can we evolve to anticipate and account for these things?
So we were talking about availability issues and ransomware attacks. What else is the FDA seeing or hearing in terms of medical devices either being at the root of a cyber incident or perhaps in terms of how these devices are being affected by cyber attacks other than ransomware, for instance?
Sure. You know, I think it's been an interesting couple of years as more and more cyber healthcare threats have actually manifested. They've actually affected hospitals and patients and so on. It's been our experience. It also seems to be backed up by HHS and research that they've done, their landscape analysis that they did relatively recently, that medical devices aren't typically the entry point for things like cyber threats, including ransomware. If anything, they tend to be collateral damage. But, you know, I think even with that, this is something where FDA certainly doesn't want to create a false sense of security or rest on a false sense of security. So our perspective is, you know, we're gonna keep doing exactly what we need to keep the devices from being that entry point, from being that source of rest. But I think, too, to that exact end, we have seen this issue of collateral damage of the medical devices being impacted. And I think we would like to see the instances of that decrease. So working with the medical device manufacturers and others to see how can we evolve the device design such that even if there is a cyber threat impacting the overall environment in which a medical device is sitting, the medical device itself is resilient and the patient safety is not impacted when that occurs.
Are there certain types of medical devices or certain categories of medical devices that seem, at least so far, to be more prone to these sort of, you know, impact of these different incidents?
I don't think we've seen any types or categories of devices that I would point to. I think more of what we're seeing are things like, does it rely on remote connectivity, something that can be interrupted by a cyber threat or by ransomware, and it's more that remote connectivity issue that we keep running into of trying to say, all right, well, if you've designed it to be dependent on this and this thing goes away, what then? So I think that's what I would probably point to.
How cyber safe would you say implantable devices are right now?
I think we've got, thanks to this new authority, a lot of really good reviews that are happening. We've got a lot of medical device manufacturers who are coming in with increasingly robust submissions for us. And so I think FDA is going to continue leveraging this new authority. We're going to continue tightening up our own processes, working with the manufacturers to tighten up theirs. So I think we're doing really well. I think the future is bright, so to speak.
So now, what's on the FDA's agenda for the year ahead when it comes to medical device cybersecurity? What is the agency working on?
Sure. So I think as I stated up top, you know, we're really focusing on the basics, the things that we think are really core to us getting right. So we have some upcoming work that we've been doing on software bill of materials because we know that that's going to be so critical to a lot of the ways that we're looking at cybersecurity. So when we look at the nuanced details of how to put together an SBOM and how to have an SBOM program, we have some recommendations and some advice that's going to be forthcoming for the manufacturers and others to use. I think we're also trying to provide even more detail and recommendations around threat modeling. So we know that medical devices are getting more complex since we put out the original threat modeling playbook. We're going to be looking to provide some additional advice on all of that. And then I think, of course, we're going to continue to look at trends and listen to the community and other interested parties within the healthcare sector, patients and caregivers and others, and have them tell us what the emerging trends are and make sure that we are putting the time and the effort necessary to stay ahead of them.
In terms of trends, as we all know, AI is the big trend that everyone is talking about. How does this sort of fit into the cyber work and device work that the FDA is doing? Because I know there's, you know, AI and a lot of different things, and it's been like in imaging systems for years, but you see it now being applied to other things. Well, what are you looking at when it comes from the cyber perspective?
Sure. So FDA has a Digital Health Center of Excellence who are the primary staff at FDA who look at AI issues. So very much leave that to the experts. But when it comes to AI cybersecurity, I think our approach to this is we look at AI as another cyber threat. If you know, an AI-enabled cyber threat can impact patient safety and can impact a medical device, then we want the medical devices and we expect the devices to be resilient against those threats. So we do think that AI cyber threats and the need to be resilient against them is already included in our existing guidance. And so we're very much, as these things are coming, looking to make sure that device designs are addressing this, that they can be properly updatable as needed, all the things that already fit into our overall secure product development framework.
And finally, when it comes to the bigger picture, what are you seeing on the horizon when it comes to top medical devices and also top medical IoT cyber issues? I know there was talk about how, you know, some of these products are more consumer-oriented. Sometimes a health delivery organization might not have a budget for, you know, a full-fledged sort of product, but they hear about a consumer medical IoT product that they think, well, maybe this would work for us. Where does this all kind of blur together, and what are you concerned about?
It's ironic that you're asking about sort of these emerging issues, because I'm going to bring it back around to legacy. So legacy devices, these older, typically unsupported, vulnerable devices, I think that's where we see a lot of the pain points continuing to be. So with our new authorities that we are granted, we can really work with the community to improve devices that are coming out post the authority that we received. But for older devices that were approved, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when things were very different when it came to cyber threats, a lot of these devices are still in use, and a lot of these devices still have a lot of clinical benefit that they provide. And so managing cyber risks and making sure that we're balancing appropriately the benefits that these devices can provide and the realities of limited budgets and all of these kinds of things with the cybersecurity of these devices, I think FDA very much recognizes that legacy remains an unsolved challenge, and I think we very much do want to roll up our sleeves along with the others in the community and really see if we can start tackling the legacy challenge in meaningful ways.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica. I've been speaking to Jessica Wilkerson of the FDA. I'm Marianne Kolbasek-Begee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.